Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Greetings and welcome to ID the Future. I'm Casey Luskin, broadcasting with Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. We have on the show with us today, once again, Professor Dominique Halsmer, Dean of College of Science and Engineering at Oral Roberts University, and author of the recent paper in the International Journal of Design and Nature and Ecodynamics titled The Coherence of an Engineered World. In the first podcast, Dr. Halsmer talked to us about some of the arguments for fine-tuning in his paper, and we have Dr. Halsmer back on the show with us today to continue to talk about this peer-reviewed scientific paper that argues quite explicitly for intelligent design. So, Dr. Halsmer, thanks for coming back on the show with us.
Thank you, Casey. It's good to be here.
Well, I want to talk about an interesting aspect of your paper. You and your co-authors don't just make scientific arguments for design, you also develop some aesthetic arguments for design. And some of our listeners might be familiar with an ID book that makes these kinds of arguments. It's called A Meaningful World by Benjamin Weicker and Jonathan Witt. But your paper picks up these kinds of arguments, and I was wondering if you could give us some examples of why the beauty in the universe points to design, in your opinion.
Beyond the normal concept of beauty, which is certainly present in nature, scientists and engineers recognize other kinds of beauty that might cause them to wonder about the origin and development of the universe. They appreciate a beautiful solution to a problem. In general, a beautiful solution is one that optimally fulfills many constraints or requirements in the simplest and most efficient manner. An example of this is the water molecule discussed earlier. They also appreciate the elegance and beauty of the mathematical expressions that are so helpful in describing physical realities. Beauty is often a guiding principle as scientists attempt to formulate laws and mathematical expressions in an effort to accurately model nature. So we see that concepts of beauty are important in the field of science and engineering. This is something that science, engineering, and the study of humanities have in common. Beauty can be used to get people's attention or make statements about value, meaning, or purpose. Human beings are naturally drawn to that which is true and good and beautiful, so it is not unreasonable to expect that a transcendent engineer might incorporate various kinds of beauty into the universe, especially if part of our purpose is to discover a relationship with this transcendent engineer.
Dr. Halsmer, does design exist only in the cosmic architecture of the universe and the makeup of our galaxy, or does it extend deeper into, say, smaller things?
Well, I think that's one of the compelling aspects of this evidence. You see it at all levels. Before the development of the microscope, no one had any idea about the incredible complexity and ingenuity we would find at the nanoscale. The living cell has been compared to the complexity of a city with all its resources and information flow and machinery that keeps life going, in addition to its self-reproducing capability, which is just mind-boggling. We are just beginning to learn how to mimic nature in this regard as we take our first baby steps in the fields of biomimetics and nanotechnology. Another fascinating new field is one called biosemiotics, which is the study of how the machinery of life communicates information, usually through coded messages. As we become more and more proficient in working at the nanoscale, scientists and engineers seem to be drawing more and more ideas from the engineering solutions that they discover within natural systems.
Dr. Halsmer, you write in your paper that, quote, biological systems are constantly undergoing processes that exhibit modularity, specificity, adaptability, durability, and many other aspects of engineered systems. If you could put that in terms that are easy to understand for a non-engineer, what does that mean and why does this serve as an argument for design?
When we investigate the machinery of life, we find that it looks amazingly similar to the kinds of systems that humans engineer, only more complex and more efficient and more ingenious. We find that living systems are made up of various modules that serve particular functions or purposes, and that each module interfaces appropriately and efficiently with other modules that may serve other functions. Human engineers accomplish this using various systems engineering principles. In fact, at least one microbiologist calls what he does reverse systems engineering. Another feature of living systems is the utilization of specific information or codes that appear to instruct the machinery on how to perform a particular function. There are many examples of this, but the most familiar example is probably the genomic code that is so efficiently packed away in every DNA molecule, but it can be quickly unraveled and read when specific proteins are needed. Adaptability speaks of the need for an engineered system to handle changes in the environment and still function at a near-optimal level. Living systems are extraordinary in this regard. We see examples of adaptive control systems in the cell, which are able to respond effectively when disturbances occur that would threaten the organism. Evolution is an obvious example of adaptability. Finally, durability is a good feature if a system might possibly sustain damage or have to survive in a harsh environment. Remember how the World War II era B-17 Flying Fortress was able to sustain a significant amount of damage and still stay in the air? It was specifically engineered to be durable in that regard. We see the same kind of thing in living organisms, like the old Timex watch. They take a licking, but they keep on ticking. There was a study done on the E. coli bacteria's ability to handle heat shock. It had a feedback mechanism with various information pathways to help it maintain a stable temperature. The investigators found that it still performed its function even after certain information pathways were removed. In other words, it degraded gracefully, which is a very desirable feature for an engineered system.
Dr. Halsmer, in your paper, you talk about bottom-up and top-down design. What is the difference between bottom-up and top-down design, and why does the top-down design that we see in biology point to intelligent design?
As Michael Behe talks about in his book, The Edge of Evolution, bottom-up refers to the idea that certain parts of a complex system must be put in place first, as in the foundation of a building, with the other parts going up next on top of the foundation. In other words, there's a proper sequence in the order of construction. Top-down engineering involves planning and calculation of what is needed before the construction process, which then informs this process. The construction of a cilium in the cell, for example, appears to show signs of top-down engineering. When a cell starts putting out a new cilium, it gathers the materials that it needs to start the process and stores them at its base until they're needed. We still have so much to learn about how all this happens, but biologists have discovered a fundamental truth that is helping them greatly. They readily admit that they make the most progress when they treat living systems as if they had been engineered. That's why we see a lot in the literature about reverse engineering of biological systems.
Well, that's certainly true, Professor Halsmer. And I'm always curious to ask engineers this sort of a question, but as you are an engineer, how does the fact that cells are filled with molecular machines influence your perspective on intelligent design? And why do you make this argument in your paper?
I think it's significant that we find the same kind of machines in microbiology that are developed through human engineering. William Paley's old watchmaker argument drew an analogy between biological structures and a watch. Now we know that this is not just an analogy. There are actual molecular machines in living systems that serve as timepieces and biological clocks, and they work in similar fashion to humanly devised clocks. In some cases, we discover molecular machinery like motors within the living cell that are extraordinarily similar to the kinds of motors that humans have been building for many years before we ever knew they existed in the cell. This is amazing to me. They have all the same basic parts. If you were to draw a schematic for each one and lay them side by side, they would be virtually identical. Can this be purely coincidental? Or is it perhaps that we might have been endowed with some minute fraction of the creativity of the transcendent engineer who planned this universe? Traditionally, this is one aspect of what it means for us to have been made in the image of God.
Professor Halsmer, in the book Consilience, the Harvard ecologist E.O. Wilson writes that all of biology points to an, quote, impersonal force because, quote, the idea of a biological God, one who directs organic evolution and intervenes in human affairs as envisioned by theism, is increasingly contravened by biology, unquote. However, you and your co-authors essentially conclude that there is, in reality, a consilience of knowledge pointing in precisely the opposite direction. And so, therefore, you and your co-authors write in your paper, quote, an interdisciplinary study of the cosmos suggests that a transcendently engineered world may be the most coherent explanation for the reality we experience as human beings. E.O. Wilson recently revived the term consilience in reference to the unity of knowledge, literally a jumping together of knowledge by the linking of facts and fact-based theory across disciplines to create a common groundwork of explanation. This phenomenon is currently being realized across the physical life and social sciences within the context of an engineering mindset. The universe displays a beautiful functionality that seems to automatically deploy for the benefit of life and mankind in particular. Even so, humans are largely able to comprehend the workings of the cosmos and recognize the widespread technological attributes that dovetail into consilience that is best explained by the wisdom of a transcendent engineer, unquote. Okay, well, that's a very elegant summary of your argument, but I was wondering if you could elaborate on what you feel are the implications of this argument.
Sure. As far as V.O. Wilson is concerned, I don't know why he assumes that just because God may not be biological, that he cannot be personal. I think the kind of world we live in suggests that this transcendent engineer is intentional and extremely competent and cares very much for human beings. Of course, the problem of evil and suffering is a big challenge, but human experience in general, and engineering research in particular, speak of the critical role that adversity and failure play in the acquisition of wisdom and the success of engineering designs. Experience tells us that resistance and adversity builds strength and understanding if engaged with the right attitude. The old adage of no pain, no gain may also be true in a cosmic sense. Henry Petrosky, an engineering professor at Duke and author, investigates this concept in his recent book, Success Through Failure, The Paradox of Design. He writes, quote, failure is thus a unifying principle in the design of things large and small, hard and soft, real and imagined. Whatever is being designed, success is achieved by properly anticipating and obviating failure, end quote. Educators know that having the freedom to fail plays a key role in acquiring knowledge and learning truth. This is so fundamental that Matthew Green at Letourneau University wrote a paper about it and coined a new term for learning through failure. He calls it flearning. He says his students do a lot of flearning. Related to this is the idea that clever engineers are often able to take something that appears to be bad and somehow turn it around and cause it to work out for good. Sometimes this is referred to as blessing in disguise or making lemonade out of lemons. But my dad was a pretty good inventor, and he used to call it making the devil work for you. This concept is recognized as an important part of the creative problem-solving process. Converting harm into benefit is one of the 40 inventive principles selected by Genrich Altshuler, founder of the TRIZ problem-solving method, after studying thousands of patents from around the world. Perhaps it can also help to explain the adversity associated with the human condition. Another question that comes up is why this transcendent engineer would not be more visible to humans during this process. Why the clandestine approach? This is where the behavioral sciences may lend some insight. Humans are thought to be the crowning achievement, not just because they possess the most complex and capable hardware in the universe, that is the human brain, but also because they possess the very powerful and transforming capacity to love, the human heart, figuratively speaking. It therefore seems likely that the purposes of such a transcendent engineer might have something to do with our endowed ability to enter into love relationships, possibly a love relationship with our maker. If this is the case, then, as is well known all over the world, potential love must be treated with the utmost care and sensitivity. At this point, Soren Kierkegaard's parable of the king and the maiden is very apropos. The king seeks to win the love of a peasant girl, but if he appears to her as the king, he may elicit her devotion for the wrong reasons. So he comes as a servant, not in disguise, for that would be deceptive, but really becomes a servant to win her love. Likewise, perhaps this transcendent engineer must keep an epistemic distance in order to obtain the desired outcome. Obviously, much remains to be investigated on this topic, but I think it's interesting that over the years, significant advances in science, engineering, and all fields of knowledge have not seemed to erode the coherence of an engineered world. On the contrary, the magnificent ingenuity displayed in nature continues to speak of a supreme competency and reliability that inspires curiosity and imitation in human minds and hope in human hearts.
Well, Dr. Halsmer, thank you so much for taking the time to explain to us some of the arguments in your paper, The Coherence of an Engineered World, which you published in the International Journal of Design and Nature and Ecodynamics. And if you don't mind me asking, you presented this paper at a scientific conference, if I understand right. Is that right?
Actually, one of my students presented the paper. It was at a conference in the Algarve in Portugal.
Oh, wow. So you are actually working with students and helping them to understand these arguments and even getting them involved in writing papers on the scientific evidence for intelligent design.
That's right. Our engineering students were involved in this paper with me.
Well, that's excellent. Well, we really appreciate the work that you're doing, and we appreciate you taking the time to come on today to talk about the arguments why you feel that our world was engineered.
Well, it's been fun, Casey.
Well, I'm Casey Luskin with ID of the Future. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2010. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.